the amazing thing about this movie is actually how little CGI there was. There's a remarkable amount of practical, actual stuff going on, and you know, when I was flying the ship, we're actually looking at a projected version of space, and when I'm with aliens, they're really there and really moving and stuff. It was really cool.
That was Alden Ehrenreich. Am I pronouncing that right, Bill Bregola?
Well, it's Ehrenreich.
Can I buy a vowel?
Talking about Solo, a Star Wars Story, which we're going to talk about. Star Wars. Sing the rest of it.
Nothing but Star Wars.
There you go. I'm joined, as always, I'm Neil Rosen, joined by Bill Bregola.
Why, that would be me.
And Bill McCuddy.
Yeah.
And our favorite, most frequent guest.
Oh, you say that every week, no matter who's here.
No, I don't. Mr. Mike Sargent is here.
I'm not Bill.
There you go. Anyway, so we're going to talk Star Wars. We're also going to talk about Bill Bregola saw The Seagull with Saoirse Ronan. And we're going to talk about Cannes a little bit. The movie that came in second, got the second prize at Cannes, is the new Spike Lee movie. And Bill McCuddy and Mike Sargent are going to talk about that, the Spike Lee film called Black KK Klansman. You just pronounce it Black Klansman or Black?
Black Klansman.
Sound like you have
three K's in the middle of the thing, you know?
It's not for Mel Tillis. You don't go Black Klansman.
Mel Tillis. Thanks for our younger viewers.
Mel Blanc.
Oh, really? We have viewers on a podcast?
Oh, listeners. Yeah, all right. Anyway. So,
and I have two major confessions on today's podcast.
Yes, Bill says that he was wrong about two things.
Which I never admit. And believe me, if Lisa Rossman was on this, I would never admit I got two things wrong.
So,
but two things really, really, really wrong.
All right, so we're gonna hold on, and listen, and wait for that. But let's start out with Star Wars, since we just heard from Alden. And by the way, him saying that it's not a special effects driven movie, I couldn't believe how many special effects were in this particular thing.
Really?
I mean,
you know what? I never felt it got bogged down by them until like 2/3 of the way through, where they're trying to get the ship repaired fast enough to then go shooting through some cosmic jizz or whatever. But the opening great set piece where they're trying to rob a space train, so to speak, that's a really effective, obviously there's tons of CG in it, but like that's a really effective, good.
So for those of you who've been living on another planet and don't know what this is about, essentially, this is a standalone movie. It's the second standalone movie in the Star Wars series, the first one being
Rogue One.
And this is the backstory on Harrison Ford's character, Han Solo. And, you know, there's a bunch of Easter eggs in it where, you know, you know, if you know the series, there's a little,
there's
a bunch of stuff like that. But, you know, you get to see how he met Chewbacca and how he gave Chewbacca the nickname Chewie. And you get to see just, you know, it's the backstory.
All of that
Solo
stuff, I think, is clever.
You know,
I just don't want to go on record. Right. I think all of that,
yeah,
all those
and,
little
and the
touches
Empire Strikes
are nice.
Back, you know that he won the Millennium Falcon the spacecraft from Lando Carlesian.
Oh, that was in that movie? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, you know that he, Mike, you're
from the Empire Strikes Back.
I'm waiting. Empire,
you find out that he won the thing off a bet from Lando.
That's
played by Billy Dee Williams. Here played by Donald Glover.
Right.
So you see actually, I mean, it's basically they're showing you, yeah, how he won the thing. And it was directed by Ron Howard, who came in as a replacement director for these two guys who did
Tim Lord and Chris Miller.
Yeah, and they did some really funny movies.
They did 22 Jump Street.
They did the Jump Street, which I love. And I think they were going to look at this. I would have loved to have seen that movie because they would have apparently they put too much comedy in it.
Which is really strange coming off Rogue One and what was the last one that had a ton of humor in it. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Why'd they fire the funny guys? Because that's the way these things have been sort of going anyway. And we should say there's tons of humor in this movie.
Well, the Harrison Ford character, the Han Solo character, is the comic relief other than some Chewie grunts, you know, along the way.
I concur.
Yeah, in the series. So now you've got a whole movie built around this guy, so it's going to be funny. I would have loved to have seen the movie with the you know, I love comedy. I would have loved to have seen.
Wait, it's not necessarily going to be funny. I mean, it could have been dark. He could have been like a Batman.
The word on the street.
Right.
It was too comedic and too funny and not serious enough for Disney's tastes. So they replaced, these guys with Ron Howard. And 80% apparently of the movie that we saw was reshot. That said, I'll chime in with my opinion in a moment. Mike and Bill, tell me what you thought.
I'll let Bill go first because I have plenty to say.
That's your wheel.
Actually, this is one of my two huge surprises. I have been bad-mouthing this guy for months now because
Ron Howard. Right. Yeah, you did.
I fucking hate Opie.
Right. You did it on our TV show.
I had zero expectation for him taking on this part because I thought, why don't they make it like Harrison Ford's nephew or something? It does not need to be him if it's so obviously not him. And I have to tell you, they cheat the height thing because obviously he's 6 inches shorter than Harrison Ford. He has a growth spurt after this movie. But I have to tell you, he's got the voice down perfectly. He's pretty much got the swagger down. And I could see how this guy could turn out to be Harrison Ford in a way I'd never seen before.
Is this one of the wrong things that you're
more than I thought? Yes, I preceded that. Yes, never listened. I was wrong number one.
Okay, well, number one. Okay,
and I'm not monstrously wrong because he's not perfect.
You were wrong.
I've been bad mouthing this guy for weeks, saying that. Want to say again, Ron Howard, and I'll correct you.
No,
I've been saying that this guy doesn't look.
Bill McCuddy on our TV show Talking Movies, which airs on CUNY, and you can
but also on this podcast because no one watches that TV show.
He was always bitching about the fact that this guy's too short, at which you just said, I do listen, that they cheated the height thing, but you were saying he looks nothing like him, he sounds nothing like him, whatever, and this was your major gripe, and he won you over, I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think they also re-looped him to make him sound more like Harrison Ford, because I watched a trailer for this like 2 months ago, and he didn't sound like he sounded in the movie I saw last night.
Mike?
Well, a couple of things.
Do you like the
movie? And just in general, I'm going to say I was much more entertained than I ever thought I would be. I think it gets bogged down a little in the CG late in the movie, but you can say that about any movie these days. You really can't.
This is true.
It's just the go-to. We have to be so accustomed to that now that if something amazing happened where they didn't do CG, we'd probably complain. So I will say that I was entertained. It's a touch long, and I found it a little talky in places, and I know you said after you watched it was way too much action. We'll get to that in a second, but I'm just saying...
Now, it's a privilege to have...
recommend it.
It's a privilege to have Mike Sargent on this because...
and he was much closer to the film than we were. He was about 20 rows in front of us where we were sitting.
Well, when it comes to Star Trek or Star Wars or anything in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Mike Sargent is really our go-to guy because you really know this stuff up and down. So I'm very curious. By the way, I don't agree with everything that Bill said, and I'll get to that in a minute. But before I chime in, please tell me your opinion on this movie.
Well, all right. First of all, I think that from contextually, I think that the new ones are definitely lacking in many ways. We won't get into. But they're lacking and disappointing in the ways that they destroy canon. You know, they have Luke do things that doesn't make sense for Luke to do. Whereas these standalones are kind of adding to the canon. They're kind of, you know, explaining why. How do you get that scar? How do you, you know, what does this mean? How do you meet the Wookiee? So that's fun. And I enjoyed all the references. There's a reference in there for Total Geek. Like this character talks about Minock cookouts, you know, and you have to even know what a Minock is.
I didn't get that one. Mike.
Yeah, exactly. There were creatures that were inside, stuck to
the references weren't for everyone.
Right, that's my point.
It seems that they have a bar scene. They seem to have a bar scene or a party scene in everyone.
But that was the beginning of the bar scene thing. That's what was cool about this one. It was a lesser bar scene because it preceded the famous iconic bar scene. It's like when the movie started, Neil turns to me and he goes, "The type isn't going back into the far." I said that's exactly the point. It's not. It's not. We're not at Star Wars
But your answer was wrong.
Because, no, it's not. No, we're before Star Wars.
No, but episode 1, 2, and 3, This takes place after those, after episode 1, 2, and 3.
Is he right, Mike?
And
speak
yes,
to us, Darth
does.
Vader.
Can't be.
Well,
not really. It takes place pretty much during the same time.
Not the first three Star Wars movies that they made. Right. Those second group of three, which are technically episode 1, 2, and 3.
Right. This, by the way, at this point in the podcast, if you listen to us, because we know more than you do,
those had the iconic crawl. And I'm saying that I don't understand why they eliminated it. But according to Bill Brigoli, you're saying the other standalone Rogue One didn't have the
crawl. That's right. It was a Disney decision.
Well, because it's not an episode.
Right. I think they decide that certain things are the thing and certain things aren't the thing.
Correct.
But they still do that long ago in an episode in a galaxy.
Well, you know? Now...
Because it is long ago.
New chapters, new episodes. These standalone films are just stories, a Star Wars story.
I'm going to... Well, tell us your opinion for the fifth time.
Neil's not going to give us his opinion.
My opinion of the film is that I enjoyed it. I'm not a huge Ron Howard fan. I think he's very vanilla. I think he's made good films. I don't feel he's ever made anything.
He's a craftsman. He backs the station wagon, or in this case, the Millennium Falcon, into the driveway.
Good films. That's what I'd say. I'm not going to down him, but I'm not a fan. Let me put it like that. So. I, like you, walked in with zero expectations, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was enjoyable. I definitely thought it was unnecessary. It answers questions.
It's unnecessary. Let's see if they put that in the
unless
poster.
Unless you're a Disney accountant.
Well, it's unnecessary.
It's unnecessary. I mean, it didn't,
Mike Sargent, it didn't, WBAI.
I'm just saying, I enjoyed it. I think it's fun. Is it ultimately forgettable? Yeah, the best moments in it are the humor. And the relationship.
So maybe they fired the wrong guy. Maybe they...
I thought about that, like what you said, because I think that what made this work and what made Han work amongst, you know, this earnest kid and this tough princess was he was, like Neil said, the comedy relief. He was my favorite character.
He's everybody's favorite character.
Not everybody. Well, some people love, you know, Luke and Leia. I remember...
Jar Jar Binks. There's like four or five people that like that.
Let's not even talk about Jar Jar.
Bill's a Darth Vader fan. That's
Listen, life. Before let me just interrupt and
yeah,
say
sure.
before Neil gives his like thesis.
Golden.
I'm not giving you a thesis.
100% I'm going to say, and I know I'm right about this. It all hangs on whether you like him as Han Solo. So
yes.
So now Neil is going to tell us what he thinks.
Wait.
I just want to finish.
Continue.
I do want to say. All right. So. In terms of his performance, yes, after a while I start to accept him. I think he went out of his way to inhabit the mannerisms of a
Relooped.
Sort of a, you know, proto Han Solo. Like you see how the Woody Harrelson character is someone he obviously looked up to and was learning some things from, because there's lots of lines that Woody Harrelson says to him that he later on has said to Luke. So there's that. But I really did enjoy Donald Glover's performance as Lando.
He was channeling Billy Dee. I believed him as a young Billy Dee.
But I felt 50% of what he did was great. The other 50% was like, what? Okay. So I enjoyed it, but I thought he was, I wouldn't say wasted, but I really thought they could have let him do more with the character.
All right, so here's my take. First off, our colleague, I read his review, Chris Najwadi, who's done the TV shows many times, said, you know, it was perfunctory. I don't know if that was the word he used, but that was the kind of the essence of what he was saying. And was it really necessary to know these things? Is it better to leave it an illusion of, like, how did he meet these people? You know, leave it to your imagination. I had zero.
Well, that's ridiculous.
I had zero expectations on Alden Ehrenreich, having seen Hail Caesar, Coen Brothers film where he played this.
He stole that. He was great in that.
But he played such a dopey kind of guy. I couldn't see him. He's an actor. I know he's a good actor. So I was very impressed with the performance. I agree with you, Bill McCuddy, that I think your enjoyment of this film will depend on whether you or not you buy into. Or like his performance as Harrison Ford, channeling Harrison Ford. Yeah, I can buy the guy as being a young Harrison Ford.
But now here comes the rote Neil Rosen.
No,
I didn't like it because it was too much action.
Well, I told you that last night. There was too much action.
But I just want to go on record as saying that really is kind of your any action movie complaint these days.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean, of those big, I'm not trying to put you in a corner.
I mean, you know, he's a slave in this... planet, which I'm sure Mike Sargent would know the name of the planet, with Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones.
Corellia.
And they
does she go on to be anything, by the way? Because the movie, I want to say one thing about the script by Lawrence Kasdan.
And his son.
Tons of really good twists. Tons of really intelligent kinds of, uh-oh, that isn't what I thought it was going to be. And in a way that even if you're looking for twists, you go, oh, look who's back and said that instead of this and is on this side instead of that.
I like the movie. Yeah, there were just too many set action pieces that went on for like, yeah, that is true, Bill. That is my complaint in a lot of action movies. But there were these 20-minute set, several 20-minute set action pieces where it was just boom, 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 bang,
did you
bang,
like
bang.
The train at the beginning like I did?
Yeah,
did
I
you
said
think
it
that
start,
was cool?
Started off great.
Right.
The movie started off great. There was like a story. There was a plot. They escape Carillion. And one gets left, it's not really a spoiler, one gets left behind, one goes off to, you know, and I like that. But then it got bogged down in too much action, but it redeemed itself by the end. There was a whole, I won't say the twist, there's a twist with some, with Woody Harrelson's character and a whole bunch of stuff.
By the way, Woody Harrelson, if you look at the poster, looks exactly like Richard Dreyfuss. It's like so crazy weird.
I won't, you know, for me, if I was rating it, you know, I would say for Star Wars fans, probably 3 out of 4 apples. For me personally, 2.5. But I wonder, Mike, you knowing this universe, do you think Star Wars fans are going to be so nitpicky going, oh, the Wookiee had less hair? You know the way these fanatics
sure.
get on
Listen,
these
Listen, I sat
things.
Next to a fellow fanatic, Steve Irvelino, and he really liked this film. He was surprised how much he liked it. But I was watching him geek out. There's tons of little things in there. If you're a fan of the Clone Wars, if you're a fan of Star Wars Rebels, like there's references, there's shots, there's costumes, there's characters, there's props. There's a lot of things in here. We even see, like, the Millennium Falcon is clean, you know, and it's always been dirty. You know, we see, you know, the Wookiee first playing the 3D chess game that, you know, and
do
so
you think
they're a lot
War
of fun.
Fans, do you think the Star Wars
yes.
geeky fanatic will be too... what do you think they would? What do you think, they would rate it?
I think it's a 50-50 movie. I think they're going to people who love it, and people who hate it. I think it's not going to please everybody.
So far, it's 70-30 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, when I say
FYI,
50-50,
I would say
no. I got another point of view on this, but go ahead. I want to. I have a completely opposite point of view that I think is kind of that you guys aren't talking about. But go ahead, finish your.
Well,
thought.
The last thing I was going to say is I think that this has enough there that you'll enjoy it. Nobody can say it's a bad film. I think the first, it's interesting you guys love the first third. I thought the first third was probably the clunkiest part. I thought
I liked
it
beginning,
took a while.
I liked the ending, the middle, I thought it got bogged down.
See, I thought this, the middle act, I thought was where it really picked up for me.
Really?
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
It keeps, I think you're talking about Lando. I mean, as Lando, soon as he comes on, it's a better movie. There's no question about it.
Is.
The two card games that sort of bookend the movie
the second,
are not the coolest way that I don't know. What I was going to say about this is that you guys keep talking about the fans, and I think the absolute opposite. This is perfect for people who don't know much about Star Wars except that Han Solo is
in the
Harrison
trilogy,
Ford,
right.
Because it's not about 20 different people; it's about one guy. It's so it has an accessibility for regular people that I think the others don't. The Rogue Nation, the last two have had all these little inside jokes from all these different movies jammed into one. This is just how Harrison Ford started out.
Yeah, but
and from that standpoint, it's
there.
So simple and so linear.
Yes.
And yes, there's plenty of other stuff for people who know more. But if you know nothing, you can watch this
That's
and
true.
Be entertained and
That's
go,
true.
Oh, this is how Harrison Ford started out. That's all I need to know going
and most
in.
Most of those characters, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, the Woody Harrelson character, the Emilia Clarke character, that villain guy that they're getting, trying to get that... what's that substance that they're trying to...
Romanium or crinodium?
Right. Those people don't crop up in other movies.
No, but
that's the one of the problems. It's like one of the things that's a spoiler for this that isn't a spoiler, that's automatically a spoiler, is if you don't know these people... From other movies, they're probably not going to live because you're meeting characters in this film that you go, well, I wonder what happens to them. Well, they must die because they're not in any of the other Star
but you
Wars
also,
movies.
But what they also do without being spoiler-free is that they sort of allude to things that will come in the future in terms of characters. They don't mention the name of a character, but they allude to a specific character that was in the original trilogy. They just allude to
so,
it.
So... Bill and
so
I,
things like that work.
Bill McCuddy and I, and Lisa Rossman, have talked about the fact on
do a television
TV
show. Have you heard about it?
That that the series, the Star Wars series, they're cheapening the brand. They're diluting the series by doing too many of these. I mean, there was a Star Wars movie that just came out. What is it? 7 months ago. They used to come out once every 4 or 5 years. And I noticed that in the screening last night, used to be no guests, several security point checks. You know, it was a big event. People would clap.
We had to give our phone up.
What's that?
We had to give our phone up, but you had to ask your way into this thing because everybody was at like an Ocean's 8 or another kind of. There were like four things going on. They're like, "Oh, you're here for Star Wars."
It seems to be the big event that it is. And right. You were telling me, Mike, that there's now going to be a Star Wars television series.
Well, here's the thing. There is going to be a Star Wars television series, and believe it or not, Jon Favreau is a showrunner for it. But what's interesting is, you know, for a while now, and especially with the cartoons, they have a formula down for what Star Wars is, and it's pretty good. If you
the
watch
they it, being Lucas or the
Lucas
they being
film,
Disney?
Well, I say Lucas
because it's a Disney product now.
It is, but it's still
and they
Lucas
spent
film.
$4 billion, right?
Yes,
so they
yes,
want their
they
money
did.
Back.
But the person who's at the top is Kathleen Kennedy, and I think the problem, if there is a problem with any of these Star Wars movies, why they fire these directors and whatnot, is because you know there is a formula, and if you stray too far from formula. You know, there's a lot of money riding on this. So that the biggest complaints about the first Star Wars reboot was that it was really Episode 4 all over again. But that,
the one that was directed by J.J. Abrams?
The one that was directed by J.J. Abrams.
Was
Force Awakens, yes.
Right.
And I think that criticism is legit, okay, but they also had to play it safe. They had to give what they think the Star Wars audience wants.
This is exactly why, and then we can move on. I know we've spent a lot of time on this topic. This is exactly why Quentin Tarantino didn't get to make a James Bond movie.
Perfect point.
Yes, because Barbara Broccoli, who controls that whole thing, said, no, he'll take it off into a weird direction that we'll never be able to recover from. He wanted to do it in black and white. He wanted to boot it back to the 60s. He wanted to do all these cool ideas. So you're exactly right. There's somebody in charge here who goes, no, that's not how we do it. This is how we do it. That's why she personally fired those two directors, brought Ron Howard in, and this is the product we have. And I'm saying, for all that Michigan,
for drinks with Barbara Broccoli.
No. For all that Michigas, this is not a bad movie.
So here's two questions. Question one is, I interviewed...
Just when you want to move on, George, Neil always has two questions.
Did George Lucas have anything to do with this? Because I interviewed him...
He visited the
for
set,
another movie, which I can't remember the name of, at the same point, right before Force Awakens.
That Red Hawk thing, that Red Tails thing, right?
Some children's film.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. I remember that
and
one.
And he said that he had nothing to do with this. So I'm now wondering... With a television series, and Ron Howard has gone on record saying that, like, apparently he was offered to, Ron Howard was offered to direct Force Awakens, and he goes, no, it's too daunting of a challenge. I can't, you know, but he said, I talked
not,
to George.
Not Force Awakens, but whatchamacallit, Episode 1. Supposedly, he had gone to Ron Howard, and Ron was the one who said to him,
so
you
Lucas
need to
has nothing
themselves.
To do with any of this stuff.
No, at this point, no. Lucas does not have anything to do with it. And
by design, I think. He's he doesn't want to be held accountable for what Disney does to it.
And I just want to say one last thing on this, because we're going to move on to another subject, and this is a good segue, is that we're living in an age now where it's all about universes, you know. When you have the universe, you can have multiple films, multiple TV shows. There are TV shows in the DC universe, TV shows in the Marvel universe, plus the movies. You know, they're going to have two Game of Thrones spinoffs. You know, anything that's got universe potential, Westworld. You know, that's today.
Well,
today,
apparently,
it's all
Black
about the universe.
In Black Panther, so
the warriors.
There's a White Panther now.
But here's the thing. That's what they want, you know. It's not about creating a tentpole. Yeah. It's about creating a universe. So that's
Wally Cox is back and he's White Panther.
Quick question: Bill McCuddy is a huge James Bond fan. Would you have wanted to see a Quentin Tarantino directed?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sure.
So you would have the fan that you
almost
are,
like I'd have been fine with it. I'd have been fine with
formula.
It as a one-off, the way on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which in history now is one of the best ones. But everybody like went, oh no, it's not. It's George Lazenby, and it's like, and he gets married, and blah 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 blah. I think Tarantino could have done something like that. But I also say that I think when, as a franchise, you get the threat of Quentin Tarantino, suddenly you get Sam Mendes doing some kind of Tarantino-esque kind of things in it. I think I really believe that the threat of bringing something more challenging to a franchise ups the game all the way around. So I think.
All right. Now, I know this is a digression here, but you said he's a big Bond fan. Can I ask him a question?
Hey, we got all the time in the world.
Nice. Nice.
Nice. All right. I got to ask you.
Who sang that song?
I don't know.
Louis Armstrong.
We have all. All right. Anyway.
It's a wonderful world.
Quick, yeah, more wine.
No, I can't. All right. So two questions. One, I agree. Everything we're talking about formula, I think that the last James Bond film was really under the weight of its own formula. It stuck to the
Skyfall or the thing after it?
The thing after.
Oh.
That was the name of it.
Yeah. Skyfall was its thing peak. After. It was its peak and
didn't love Skyfall, but no, I
So
what's the question?
The question is, did you think that that was the problem with the last one? It just felt like you'd seen that all before.
Well, we've seen it all before. The whole franchise trying to reinvent everything.
But that's what made it.
That's a Bond film.
That's what made it underwhelming, in my opinion.
And to the answer to your second question is no, it should never be a woman.
No, that was not my second question. My second question made me forget my second question. Sorry, okay. You can move on.
So Bill Brigoli saw, switching gears entirely, The Seagull, based on the Anton Chekhov
universe.
Tell us about it, Bill.
Speaking of Star Wars and Star Trek, it's right. Chekhov.
Right. That's right. Very good. Chekhov. Very funny. Go ahead.
Well, you thought there were too many action scenes in Star Wars. You should see Chekhov. Oh, man. Okay. Listen to this cast. Elizabeth Moss, Saoirse Ronan, Annette Bening, Corey Stoll, Brian Dennehy, Mira Winningham. And it's Chekhov. And it's about an aging actress. And this is
Just going to say that cast sounds like the unemployment office in West Hollywood.
Stop. Yeah.
I didn't know Brian Dennehy was still alive.
He's still around. And
did they do this a hologram. Play somewhere first?
This was a play. This was written as a play.
Did this cast do it?
No. No, they did not. They came together just for this. They actually shot it in New York and not Russia.
Who directed?
It's a guy named Michael Mayer. He hasn't done a whole lot.
Oh, Michael Mayer, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, nice guy. Yeah. I interviewed
not Mike Myers.
Not Mayer,
Michael
Mayer.
He used and to be a
screenplay is thankfully not by Chekhov, but a guy named Stephen Caron. Now, you mentioned it was this done as a play, not by this cast, but it does seem a little stagey, as plays do when they get transferred to the screen. That said, these people all do a lot with their roles, particularly Elizabeth Moss. She has a very small part, but she knocks you out as this woman who decides not to marry the guy who's crazy about her, but a guy who couldn't care less about her.
And, why did she do that?
How do you think I got married?
Well, there you go. And Annette Bening is this aging actress who kind of fawns after this writer character played by Corey Stoll. But
that's Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan's character is in love with Annette Bening's love interest, who's a somewhat older guy, and she's smitten with him. But
this
younger guy. So
this
is Russian. No, they don't actually do accents. They pretty much speak in their own accents. And
the time frame is
the time frame is still 19. Well, no, it's around
1905.
Uh-huh. Pre-revolution in Russia, and actually the house that they, even though the house that they filmed it
is they supposedly in Russia, or are they supposedly in Russia?
But so, yeah, they are supposed to be in Russia, and they refer to Russian towns and things. But the house they filmed it at was actually built at the time that the film was set, which was 1905, which is pretty cool.
So if you're a fan of Star Wars, will you like the film?
Exactly.
No, so seriously.
If you think this is about Steven Seagal, you won't be happy.
What about the cameos?
There are none.
Were you familiar with the Chekhov
play? I had to read it in college, yes.
Okay, so do you think, and there's many adaptations.
All
of
right, I'll tell you, it passed the acid Bill Brigoli test. The night before, I worked. I basically didn't get any sleep from,
1974.
Sometime on Sunday morning until that next Monday, Monday after this screening ended, I finally got to go to sleep.
Wow.
I did not fall asleep during this movie.
And it's not short, right? It's
It is short. It's like 93 minutes. It's actually survivable.
The performance is great.
Performances are all very good.
And
it's just a little stagey, but that's it.
Not going to make 10 cents,
it's a grown-up movie, and it won't make it
back. If we have an art house audience listening right now, should they seek it out? Because
they could actually seek it out and have an okay time and say, hey, I understood Chekhov for the first time.
Oh, so they make Chekhov understandable.
Yeah, that's the best thing about it.
There you go.
You actually know what's going on. It's very soap opery.
I like Corey Stahl from Ant-Man.
He's been in tons of stuff.
No, he's very good in it. And he bounces off Saoirse
really
well.
This would, I would think, be kind of the most demanding role, at least for his acting chops, that we've seen Corey Stahl in.
He handles it
normally the bad guy.
Well. He plays a successful writer.
They all showed up on the red carpet.
With this young girl fawning over him.
At Tribeca. They were played at the Tribeca Film Festival.
Actually, he was probably my favorite person in the movie.
Corey Stahl? He's very good. I mean, whenever I see this guy, he's got a very charismatic presence that I really
So, Saoirse, give us a little, or Sushi, or whatever you want to call
Saoirse,
it.
Saoirse, rhymes with inertia.
That reminds me, Neil
working a lot right now, and is this a plus column for her, minus, neutral?
Plus, actually. It's not the kind of role that's going to make her an even bigger star. And I actually interviewed the director, and he said that he was lucky. He got her before Lady Bird came out.
Oh,
and
really?
Neil thought that there were too many action scenes in Lady Bird, by the way. But he got her for this movie before Lady Bird, so she wasn't famous and probably less expensive.
Moving on, we didn't get to this last week. The Cannes Film Festival recently ended, and the movie that everybody's talking about is not the movie that won the grand prize at Cannes, but the runner-up, the second prize.
Remind us what won the grand prize.
Yeah, why don't you remind us, Bill?
So neither of us know.
Because I don't know.
But that's my point exactly, is nobody's talking about the winner.
It's not that little Czechoslovakian kid
I think
movie.
It's a Japanese film, but I'm not positive.
No, but the movie that we're...
It's called Black Klansman.
The movie we're talking about is Spike Lee film.
Spike Lee film. And it's significant, the win, for a number of reasons, because Spike felt he was robbed... back in the day for Do the Right Thing, where he was. Yeah, well, there it is.
So wait, remind everybody.
You know what beat him that year in the Oscars? Because he always talks about it. Well, I've interviewed him. Bill and McCutcheon interviewed him tons of times. You've interviewed him, Bill Bregoli.
Oh, Spike
Lee, haven't
Spike? Yeah.
He likes me. So I always tell him how much I love Do the Right Thing. He goes, yeah, but I was robbed by that Driving Miss Daisy thing. He's really upset about the
So, but to be clear about this conversation, Do the Right Thing was never at Cannes.
It was at Cannes.
It didn't win,
and it should have won, is what
I see.
Saying.
So, okay.
It was clearly...
So the should have won isn't the Oscar. You meant it was there then, and so
it was there
when you
then,
talk about him being annoyed that he didn't win the last time,
for
you're
many
talking about
years,
Cannes.
Right, we're talking about Cannes. And
so is he going to be bitter now?
So now it's redemption for him because he finally...
Right.
He was even talking about it. He's like, I'm going to win this time because...
But he didn't
you
win.
Know, well, let's put it this way. He's very happy. He got the Palme d'Or, you know.
There's a lot of ways to win at Cannes.
Yeah, there are.
Honestly,
they
don't have a first, second, and third. They have a jury. They have audience selection. They have the Palme d'Or. So,
and that's what he won, and that's what he's happy about.
And it's about a black guy that infiltrates the Klan.
Right.
And it's based
on a book. It's a true story. It's based on a book about a black man who infiltrated the Klan. Played by Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington. Yeah, the character's name is Ron Stallworth, and also stars Adam Driver as his colleague. And
Adam Driver seems such an odd choice to be like in a
anything.
When does this take place? what decade are we talking about?
This is in the early 70s with the Klan. And
there's somebody playing David Duke in this. Apparently.
Yes, there is somebody playing David Duke in this as well. I'm interested to see it because, you know, for me, Spike Lee is kind of hit or miss. I think he's a great filmmaker in that he always has something to say, but his films have been hit or miss. And I think when he hits, he can knock it out of the park. You know, and from all we're hearing, this is it. This is the kind of material he needs to be working with. Spike needs to have something he feels passionate about, not just intellectual.
Let's be more specific. Mm-hmm. This film, we've already said what it's about, but it's being heralded and
it won probably
because it's very pointed about Donald Trump.
True.
And it's very pointed about the Charlottesville situation and how Trump didn't or did react to that.
True.
So that's I'm not trying to take anything away from the film. It didn't win just because of those things, but that's very much in the agenda of Spike Lee on this film.
Sure, but you know, not to sound esoteric, but I mean, I think that is really when art is at its best, when it has to speak to something that needs to be spoken about.
Oh, agreed. Now, no one's seen it, right? So it was just none of us have.
No,
when are they starting to show it?
When do you think they'll?
It comes
start
out
screening?
In August. It comes out in August.
So they'll be screened. And who do you know who's distributing it? Universal,
you know,
generally Spike's.
I can tell you, it's probably Universal.
But yeah, I can't wait to see it. And I don't understand, I have to see the movie, how somebody who's black can infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan. So
well,
that alone.
Should we? That's in the trailer, right? He's sort of a Cyrano de Bergerac for a white guy. He's right, like, they don't so literally send a black guy into the meetings. Oh. There's a white guy who's his partner. And that's why they say this movie's kind of like the Mod Squad. It gets compared to a lot of lesser kind of things that make it seem like maybe it's not as great as everybody's saying.
Well,
it is.
Because this has never been anything like
again, it. I'm not trying to piss on Spike Lee, but like it constantly gets compared to like television projects of the time. And so just from the standpoint that it's a very pedestrian kind of plot, like it moves like it moves through this thing the way you would expect it to.
Well, you know, again,
none of us have seen it. But.
No, but when you say the way you would expect it to, you know, what would be the expectation?
Well, a rote kind of by the book kind of infiltration movie
where what happens?
Where they're undercover and they're like in a Mod Squad episode, it would be Link goes and joins the.
Okay, but let's just go to that next step. What would happen? You know, even if you know it, like a horror movie, like, okay, you're going to go to a haunted house and everybody's going to get scared. You know, if this is a genre, okay, wrote, maybe it's only been done on television, which is a whole other conversation. You know, what are the expectations and how will you feel?
Wait a minute, let me, because I haven't seen it yet, let me back it up and let me offend you in a different way. Like, no, like, we talked a lot about Get Out and how Get Out was a good, not great movie that got elevated because it was a politically correct at the time. It checked all the boxes, and so suddenly it got elevated to this. It's the most amazing movie of the year, and it should win the Oscar. I kind of feel like
but we've talked about that on this.
Mike has actually talked about this on this particular.
Right, but
yes,
we've talked.
Yes,
so
wait, I want to hear.
But
what
now saying. That now this thing sort of goes after Charlottesville and goes after Trump. It feels to me like it's maybe getting elevated for that reason.
But
like
we
it's
can't make
great.
That,
well,
we can't
but
see,
we haven't
but
seen
we
it yet.
But here's what I would say. Okay, even for you to say that it goes after Charlottesville, I don't know the lens.
Well, that's what I've heard. That's all I've heard.
Again, but I'm saying what you've heard, that's what I'm saying. But from who? From what kind of journalists? Who were these journalists that wrote these articles?
Who are these people?
And so I would say, again, from being the perspective of being a black film critic, okay, I often, you know, as a black person in this country, you often see films made by white people, about white people, where, you know, people of color occupy whatever. And we have to relate. We have to understand that we love these filmmakers. Great. They've had access. They do it. Okay. And so these films are made by them and then they're reviewed by them. When black films come out, films by a black filmmaker, you know, when white people write about it, they write about it from where they see it,
right,
not from where we see it. So what it may be for one part of the population and another, maybe two different things. But at the same time, a movie like Get Out, okay, it spoke to something that's not being spoken about. You know, you can draw allusions. I just saw Star Wars. I could draw allusions watching Solo, you know, to the, there's a whole lot of immigration stuff in Solo. We could easily draw a line to Trump, you know, if we wanted to. But it's really not what the movie's about.
But let me get back to this.
You
said yourself it's hit or miss with Spike Lee.
Absolutely.
And I'm saying this hit may be.
Could be, yes.
Could that's, be, because none of us have seen it.
Possible.
Is very much based on right movie at the right time.
Well, I'm hoping.
Trump's our president.
I'm hoping.
This is very anti-Trump, obviously. And that's the message, whether they're white or black journalists who've covered it so far have said, this is very anti-Trump, a statement against Charlottesville. So Spike gets a pass if he's made a TV series kind of movie.
It gets
jumped up to, this is the right movie at the right time.
Would table
and I still may totally love it.
You could be wrong.
I think we all reserve judgment until we see the film.
But we're talking about it.
I find Spike to be always a really interesting filmmaker.
Definitely.
His films are rarely linear in the sense that they don't follow conventionals. Like, even Do the Right Thing, which to me is his best film. I mean, it's not a conventional storyline.
No.
It jumps all over the place. You know, you had one of the great scenes in that movie when they cut away and you have all the different ethnic groups shouting right into the camera their racial epithets. I mean, you know, he's really a fascinating filmmaker. And I can't wait to see how he tackles this. This is apparently, like you said, based on a true story. And he'll throw other things in there, and I like Spike.
Listen, I'm thrilled if he's like happy Spike with Can now. Oh, if he's happy with Can now, then I'm thrilled.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you say right movie at the right time. I think, you know, Spike lobbied. They wanted to have a white filmmaker make the Malcolm X story. And
this is true.
Right. And Spike said, no, an African-American director should do this. So I think this particular story, I'm glad that Spike.
Well, David Duke advocated for a white director for this film, and Spike won out. So.
Who's playing David Duke?
I think Wonder Woman had to be directed by a woman.
Who's playing David Duke?
Topher Grace
plays
as David Duke.
There you go.
Wow, you know.
All right. So before we go, a couple of quick
Spider-Man.
Notes. I will be. If you're listening to this, we record.
Wait. I was wrong about two things.
Oh yes, Bill was wrong.
Oh yeah.
What was the second thing?
Apparently,
you were wrong?
It was about Spike Lee at Cannes. No. I don't know. Continue, and I'll.
You can't remember the second thing?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm on the Weekend Today show in New York this Sunday, Memorial Day weekend. I'm plugging myself here with a summer preview. I'm talking about if you want to get up early or DVR it, Sunday Today in New York on Channel 4 here in New York. I'm talking with Pat Battle and their other host. Gus, I can't remember your last name, but they were very nice. And we talk about The Incredibles, and we talk about Ocean's 8, which Bill Brigoli saw. And we'll talk about where he's not going to tip that off.
Not at all.
And we talk about...
But he went to...
It was a press conference. Right, which took place at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where the movie takes place.
The Met Gala.
So much of the movie was not shot at the Met, but some parts were.
And everybody was there. And our
everybody
buddy
was there,
Dave Carter
except
was
Tiffany.
The
Tiffany
was
did not show.
Master of Ceremonies.
But
who didn't show?
Tiffany was not there.
Tiffany but, who?
And they actually...
just Tiffany. Not
just
Tiffany.
Tiffany. Yeah, just one of these one-word people.
No, but he means
Zendaya
the store. The Tiffany store wasn't there.
Cartier was there.
Cartier show.
But it was pretty impressive. They held
Van
it in Cleef this room.
Ben Cleef came. Arpel did not show up.
They held in this room with real Egyptian artifacts, and everybody was in front. And
they held it at the Temple of Dunder. Is
that what it is? I thought it was the Temple Beth Doom.
No, it's the Temple of Dunder or Dunder.
Okay, yeah, it was cool. Whatever it was cool. And they were all there except for one or two cast members, and they all looked wonderful.
So
and
we're going to talk about
it. We'll talk about the movie in a couple of weeks. Comes out
Bill's
in two
got,
weeks.
Bill's got interviews with
June 8th.
I got interviews
and
with
I will
the
wait to review the movie that I saw this afternoon that I was wrong about. The second thing I said on our television show, the thing I was most looking forward to was Paul Schrader's movie First Reformed, and then Neil went to a party with Ethan Hawke, and Ethan Hawke cornered Neil and said, "This is the best thing I've ever done."
He said it's one of the best things he's ever done.
Which I guess I agree with, but this I was completely wrong about this film.
We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that.
And do we have time, Bill Brigoli, for Mike Sargent to talk about a movie that he just saw called A Kid Like Jake?
Talk.
Well, now that we've said that, he has to.
Hell yeah.
Well, I'll just say this. It's directed by Silas Howard, and it stars Jim Parsons.
Jim Parsons from
The Big Bang Theory.
By the way, is anyone listening to him on Sirius on the weekends? He's got a show where he talks politics, and he's really smart. Jim Parsons is like a really intelligent guy on the political scene right now, and he gets an hour every week on the Andy Channel. And if you have a chance to listen to it,
I have to tell
he's
you,
brilliant.
My wife and I have the same comment on Jim Parsons, and I'm going to ask you this question. Everything we've ever seen Jim Parsons in, it's whether it's TV commercials, he's a one-note guy. He's always that Sheldon character. Maybe it's a little less Sheldon-esque, but I'm always seeing that kind of character.
I'm sure he appreciates you saying that.
You know, even in that, wasn't he in the Chappaquiddick movie, if I'm not mistaken?
No, he's not.
He was not in the Chappaquiddick movie. Okay.
It was another Jim.
I've seen him in many things, and it's always...
There's a guy named Jim in that, though, so you're close.
Well, he's always Jim Parsons to me. So is he Jim Parsons in this team?
All right, I have to say I've never seen Big Bang Theory, so I can't really say. All right. But he does seem kind of like he seems on award shows.
He's the dad of this special kid, right?
But he's the dad of this special kid. The movie also stars Octavia Spencer.
Tell me what it's about.
Third time he's where... It's about the parents who have...
But who's the mom? The
The mom is Claire Danes.
Claire Danes,
Claire
right.
Danes. Tell us the plot.
The plot is about two, you know, middle-class parents here in New York who have a kid who's 4 years old, who's really, it's a boy who's likes to play dress-up, really is having gender issues. And not necessarily confusion, but this is who he is right now, whether he's going
to
stay that way or not.
And the parents roll with it to a point, right?
It's a very, very, very well-written piece, very well-written, very thoughtful, really fantastic acting. I got to tell you, you watch stuff and you go, wow, there was nothing there. They just made a whole lot out of it, especially Octavia Spencer and Jim Parsons together, and this is the third time they've been together in a film. So it's interesting. And I will say that the director is a trans person, Silas Howard, who did a lot of stuff for Transparency and a number of other shows, and is a director and a consultant on the new show Pose that's coming up this fall.
Oh, that I see all the trailers for that. Looks amazing.
Looks amazing. So he's working on that as well. But it's really a film. It comes out June 8th. But A Kid Like Jake, I have to say, very thoughtful, well done movie.
I'm not going to give anything away, but from what I've seen from the trailer, it's like they support this kid. He can dress whatever he likes. And then the school says, well, wait a minute. And then the parents start battling about, well, have we given him too much? Have we allowed him to do too much? And that's, to me, what's interesting. The parents are sort of, they're supportive to a point, and then it's like, wait a minute.
Well, should it's actually much deeper.
Should we discourage this, or should we encourage this?
That seems
to be very much about the time right now.
It's much more. It's that, but it's much more than that, because that does become an issue. You know, there's a certain amount of denial on one character's part, and there's a certain amount of blame. You know, there are additional pressures, but it's really about a lot of things, because it's about the system as well. It's about other kids and what they're taught and how they will treat a little child. It's just a film really worth seeing.
And I think that, like, Bruce Jenner's parents, if they were alive, would look at this film and go, did we make the right decision or the wrong one?
The movie too, right.
Well, that's very interesting. I look forward to looking at that movie, A Kid Like Jake. I'm very interested in the fact that First Reformed, Bill McCuddy says, does not live up to the hype that Ethan Hawke...
97% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I guess I'm in the 3%.
Well, Paul Schrader is hit or miss for me, too. So, I mean, he's done some of the greatest movies ever. Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, Affliction's a good movie.
And this is his comeback. Everybody says it's great.
Pretty
but
crappy movies, too. All right, so anyway, what's opening next week, Bill Bregoli?
Something I have a feeling you're going to see soon, called Adrift.
Adrift, that's right, with Shailene Woodley. And Sam, I think it's Kaplan.
Yeah.
Bring Shailene some deodorant.
Remember, we reviewed the Sam Kaplan movie.
What? Her whole thing is like she doesn't use any. She's like totally organic and blah 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 blah.
I don't know anything about that.
Everyone says she reeks.
So we've got Adrift, and we've got what else is up?
I don't know if we're going to see any of these. Something called Action Point from Paramount, and Upgrade. It's a thriller.
Upgrade. I want to see.
Okay.
I like it. It looks like a bad 70s version of the $6 Million Man. Or 80s version, I should say.
Well, there you go.
With Jean-Claude Van Damme.
So, Mike Sargent, we can follow you on...
You can follow me on WBAI. You can go to WBAI.org. I have a website called lifeislikesciencefiction.com. You can go there because I'm on every Monday night, midnight till 3 a.m. And I also do a show called Real World, Friday morning.
Before we go, can you just say, Luke, you are my son.
Luke.
And Mike, it's Mike on screen if you want to tweet at Mike.
You are my son.
He is the best Twitter name of
Bill
all.
Bill McCuddy. You can find
Bill McCuddy.
Find me at Neil Rosenapples.
Bill McCuddy.
And again, if you want to reach Bill Bregoli.
You can go to Cronin and Phelan's Pub on Steinway and Broadway.
I hope everyone listening does that.
Or you can just tweet us and we'll get the message to Bill Bregoli. Anyway.
Right ahead.
This is a real short podcast today. We're in the third
3 hours.
Hour. Oh, okay.
This could be a two-parter, because are we going to do one next week? Should we announce now that we're not? Because it's Memorial Day weekend. So we'll just leave it that way. Maybe we will, maybe we won't.
That's right.
Move to the edge of your seat.
Okay. And as always, as I said, Neil Rosenapples is where you can find me on Twitter. And thanks for sitting around. Bill McCuddy. You know, what do we do on the show every week, Bill McCuddy?
Well, this week we drink too much wine. We watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
That's right, we do. And thanks for sitting around.
First Reformed is one of those.
Wow, that
really?
That's more severe
is
than
that bad?
You said originally.
Oh.
And we'll talk about that. Maybe we'll talk about that on our next podcast. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us this week. We'll sit around talking movies with you again next time.